south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
I'm here. It's me, Johnny, caffeinated and motivated. Well, caffeinated anyway. It's like I always say, you know, you live in Latin America, it's the land of the best coffee in the world, and if you don't drink it, it's like buying a ticket to Disneyland and never going on the rides. Oh, and today, by the way, I've got a strictly one-of-a-kind boots-on-the-ground story concerning yours truly. We'll get to that in a minute or two. You're going to like it. But first, another little something that could only happen in Latin America. You know, lately I've been doing lots of travel in Latin America, man. My passport pages have been filling up like an outhouse at Oktoberfest. In fact, in a month or so, I'll have to go down and get another one. That ought to be good for another expat file story or two. You know my philosophy on embassies and consulates, American and otherwise. If you want privacy, as much as you can retain of it anyway, and that's what I always recommend, that means having the smallest social footprint possible. I say you should definitely keep away from consulates and embassies, unless you don't mind being stamped, tagged, cataloged, and spied on. But there are times when you need to renew your passport, so you're stuck, and you have to actually walk in and see firsthand how the sloth patrol works and how your money is misspent. Oh, and just a word of advice. Before you go to the embassy, eat lots of garlic and frijoles. That way, when they f*** with you, you can get a little backdoor revenge. No pun intended. So anyway, been traveling a lot, taking a lot of taxis, metros, subways, you know, where they have them, and Ubers. Speaking of Uber, here is something very strange that popped up lately. You know how when you request an Uber, there may be two, three, or four cars in the vicinity, and the price is there, and you select the one you want, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it just so happened the other day when I was requesting an Uber, the usual two or three car icons popped up, and a little icon for a motorcycle popped up. Yes, there are some pilot programs going on in Latin America right now where you can take an Uber Moto. It's called Uber Moto. Say what? Well, let me tell you, it's not recommended. But man, is it cheap compared to taking a regular Uber car. For example, on my recent Uber request, there were two cars. One was $4.20 for the ride, one was $3.80, and the motorcycle, $1.20. In the local funny money, of course. So just be aware, here in Latin America, Uber motos are coming to a town near you. Of course, they're starting out in some of the big cities first. So the question is, should you avail yourself of the service? Or does it just kind of scare the hell out of you? Now, you know how congested traffic is in big American cities. Well, in big Latin cities, you could triple that pain, agony, and frustration. In fact, it always surprises me why there aren't massive occurrences of road rage down here, but it's the Latin mentality, you know, mañana time and the subtle art of standing in line. Hey, now, there's a good title for a book or even a master's thesis, Zen and the Art of Standing in Line. Yes, and for us gringos anyway, it really does take some Zen. Better yet, how about this title? The Art of Standing in Line Without Losing Your Mind. Hey, I could write that book. I'm the expert. I got my 10,000 hours in. But of course, you have to be there to experience the kind of frustration and the pointless mental anguish for us gringos and expats. But then for local Latinos, they just grin and bear it. You know, sometimes I think it's genetic programming. When Latinos see a line, they automatically get in it. You know, I can understand why there are huge lines at most government buildings. I mean, look at the paper-shuffling mental midgets who work there. But banks have huge lines, too, and those are private outfits. I don't get it. Though lines at government buildings have created a kind of a career opportunity for what they call professional line standers. Yep, where there's a line, there's a professional line stander. A fake do-nothing job, to be sure, but a job nevertheless. I think the job requires an IQ of at least 65, so George Bush Jr. would get in just under the wire. In fact, I think he speaks a little Spanish. That'll give him an edge. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, we were talking about Uber taxis and the new bad kids on the block, Uber motos. Well, as mentioned, they'll pop up in certain cities when you're looking to get an Uber, and you'll see them around town now. They'll be wearing a yellow or orange fluorescent vest that says Uber in big black letters on the back. Oh, and you can bet they're going to get you to your destination super fast because they will break every rule in the book. Of course, that includes the helmet laws. Yep, every Latin country has helmet laws. And once in a while, you'll actually see a moto driver using one. Sometimes you'll even see a motorcycle cop wearing one. And of course, if you select an Uber Moto, he'll have a helmet for you. That's part of the requirement to get on the Uber team. But don't fool yourself and think the passenger actually uses those things. I've seen many Uber Motos now zipping around with passengers on the back. Yep, you heard me, passengers plural. Also pretty normal here in Latin America. Anyway, I've seen Uber Motos driving around with a client with a passenger helmet dangling from the seat strap. Anyway, who would want to use a helmet that had any number of unknown greasy heads bouncing around in it every day? Ew, what a revolting prospect, huh? So, just a little heads up. Did I say heads up? To you backpackers and gringo gonna-bees and wannabes. I'm talking about backpackers here because no gringo on a normal or decent budget would want to subject himself to that kind of torture. Why? It's just too damn dangerous. You're taking your life in your own hands. The motorcyclists down here are absolutely out of their minds. And you want to ride on the back of one of those things driven by a maniac idiot just to save $2 or $3? Oh, and full disclosure here, I've done it. Just in the interest of finding out what it's all about. And I'll tell you, the pilot, the driver, was backpacker ripe. And of course, I was downwind from the guy. Won't do that again. That said, a gringo on a normal budget would think twice before jumping on the rear seat of a rice burner of a guy you don't even know. But a backpacker, well, the whole point of backpacking is to get by on the absolute minimum possible. By the way, I was just reading an article in Spanish in Argentine newspaper that said, get this, 87% of all city transit accidents involve a motorcyclist. And of course, the doctors I know down here tell me all the time that if it wasn't for motorcycles, emergency rooms would be very lonely places. All right, moving on. Now, this interesting email from John. A lot of Johns in this world, huh? A lot of Daves in this world. You know how many emails I get from guys named Dave? Kind of strange. You know, way back when I was living in Chicago, I only remember knowing two Daves. But man, since I've been doing this show, it's like they're crawling out of the woodwork. Can't think of why so many moms of Gen Xers glommed onto that name Dave. So while we're on the subject, as a tribute to all you fine listeners out there named Dave, let's have a little fun just for a minute. Can you tell me where the following bit comes from? Here, let me cue this up for you.
Did I ever tell you that Mrs. McCabe had 23 sons and she named them all Dave? Well, she did. You see, when she wants one and calls out,
come into the house, Dave! Dave!
She doesn't
Dave,
get one. Dave, all 23 Dave, Daves of hers Dave, come on the run.
Dave, Dave,
this makes things quite difficult at the McCaves, as you can imagine, with
Dave,
so many Daves.
Dave,
and that wasn't a smart
Dave,
thing to do.
Dave!
You got it, right? Good old Dr. Seuss. So what's that got to do with anything besides the fact that too many Daves in the house will probably spoil the bathwater? Well, some child psychologists are saying Dr. Seuss's books were racist. Yep, you heard me. Old Dr. Seuss was a racist. That's what some are saying. And that they should be banned from public school systems and libraries. Man, what a nutty world we, or I should say you, live in. I don't. I live in Latin America. Which begs the question, did old Doc Seuss make the Cat in the Hat intentionally black? I'd say it was just the opposite. He was always a smart-ass wise guy who got over on everyone. What about green eggs and ham? I suppose they'll change it to rainbow eggs and ham, huh? Yeah, right, and am I glad I don't live up in the States to experience all that horse poop. I suppose next they'll change Charlie Brown to Charlene Brown because he's not gender neutral enough. And how about Dick and Jane? Enough said about Dick and Jane. Anyway, it's pathetic. Is that not reason enough to get that Plan B going and get the hell out of Dodge? So, really, how's that Plan B of yours coming? Are you just thinking about it once in a while, or are you actually putting one together? Well, you know, it's almost impossible to do it on your own. You really need some help and a network, and that's just what I offer with my Expat Insider Seminars, and the next one's coming up in a month or so. Starts on the 6th of July in Guatemala, Central America. Runs for a week, but during that week, you'll be drinking from the fire hose. It's true, you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on anyone else who happens to come down trying to do a Plan B on their own. Hey, and that's not just my opinion. That's what attendees tell me over and over again. Of course, now as this show goes out, we're late into May. But if you sign up by June 1st, you'll still get in on the early bird discounts. That's $500 off per person. And if you're coming down as a single person and you're looking for a roommate to save even more money, in that case, with a roommate, it works out to a discount of $750 per person. So how do we set that up? Just give me a shout out before or after you sign up, and we can usually hook you up with a like-minded person. Of course, a lot of people come down to the seminar and stay another week. They go to the John Galt post-seminar trip and or at the same time apply for their permanent or temporary residency in Guatemala. Now, here's a little advice. You know, it seems like every time you turn around, one of the Latin American countries have made some changes with their permanent and temporary residency programs. They almost never make it easier unless it's a bureaucratic mistake. I'm telling you, they always give you more hoops to jump through, and residency programs do not bode well for the future. The United States is making all sorts of side deals with Latin American countries because, you know, the U.S. funds a lot of programs in Latin America. So who do you think the skunk-ass Latin bureaucrats bow down to? They're always sucking up to the U.S. for the skim. And as it sits right now, the U.S. State Department, the IRS, and the Treasury Department, they're worried about the flight of dough out of the country. Wouldn't you? With that huge $20 trillion debt, they got to keep the sheep in the barn. A lot of the big movers and shakers are getting the hell out of Dodge. And little guys in the know like you and me are doing it too. Now, the best way to pull it off and to be safe in the long term is to get residency in a foreign country. That way, when the poop hits the fan up in Boston and Cleveland, you're settled in your new country and you don't have to leave every 90 days like a tourist. My point is, if you're not on the road to residency right now, you better start thinking about it soon. The doors are closing, and I'm seeing more than a few warning signs on the horizon. I know you want to have a plan B, but we all do procrastinate, don't we? Then, once you get down here, if you want, you can go native and procrastinate all you want, just like the locals. It's funny, it seems like every Latino I know, in every strata of society, has a mañana-style procrastination gene. I know, we all go through similar phases up in the States, but this residency plan B and getting out of Dodge thing is really getting towards the 11th hour. It really should be topping your priority list. Anyway, one of the best ways to get your plan B ducks in order in a hurry is to come to my Latin American Insider Seminar. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. All right, enough said about that and enough with the Daves. Let's talk about John's email. He says, Johnny, as an avid listener to your podcast, I saw a very interesting new development on the southern border between California and Mexico. It seems like the U.S. federal government in California is now going to start stopping cars on the way out of the country as they pass through the border and go to Mexico, which is kind of scary. Then he says, definitely people need to get a plan B together. Luckily, he says, I have dual citizenship. So I just need to figure out how to get a sustainable location-independent income going myself, and I'm on my way. Signed, John. Then he linked me to this article that says, Border Southbound Inspections Begin. It starts out by saying, beginning at 7 a.m. Tuesday, May 7th, the U.S. Customs and Border Protections Office, the CBP, will begin operating four new inspection booths installed between the 10 lanes of Interstate 5 South in the direction of Chaparral, Mexico. This was information obtained from the General Services Administration. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers will reinforce the revisions they are carrying out in a random manner, the article says, to detect possible traffic of money, weapons, or violations of migratory norms in traffic going to Mexico, as well as to try to detect fugitives of justice. Then it says the Office of Customs and Border Protection say that car searches will be a valuable tool with the aim to meet the objective of having border operations smart, effective, and strategic without, it says, affecting the regular flow of traffic. Yeah, right. Did you ever see an aerial view of that border station? Fat chance. And here's the most worrying part. It says with the new infrastructure and the checking of cars flowing south to Mexico, personal biometric data will be registered and maintained. With an official press release from the department calling the new technology, quote, another milestone, unquote, in the construction of an efficient and safe traveling inspection system. Then it says the director of operations of the U.S. agency, Pete Flores, announced that at first inspections and revisions will be a complete surprise to the vehicle operator and of short duration. He said there will be no great impact on traffic flow. Yeah, right. Insert Mexican donkey hee-haw laugh here. All right, me Johnny here. For you drivers going to Mexico, that doesn't sound good. So if you're up for a little border and custom control, physical and or sexual assault, by all means, take a chance. You can roll the dice and plan on a road trip to Mexico. And make no mistake about it, it is sexual assault because it's really defined as a non-consensual pat-down of the privates, right? Now, the sticky thing is you say you consent to the pat-down, but it's under duress because they won't let you through unless you give them the nod, which is not at all what you really want to do. Same with air travel. Now, to me, the most ridiculous statement is when the Office of Customs and Border Protection and Inspections people say it will significantly increase the costs of narcos, etc., doing business. In other words, they're saying the shakedowns will cost the narcos more dough because they'll have to find new ways to evade the measures. To which I always say there's a huge hole in that argument. How is it they'll catch a traveler with two joints and a crack pipe at an airport and lock him up? Meanwhile, law enforcement experts point out that about 10 tons of cocaine per year are confiscated at the Mexican border. That's about 2% of what gets through, so we're looking at 500 tons of cocaine slipping through the border every year. That would mean dozens and dozens of semi-trailers just chock full of the stuff getting on through. How'd that happen? Well, I'd say you've got a whole network of corrupt U.S. border agents that are looking the other way and getting paid for it, of course. Meanwhile, the stoner at the airport who forgot he had two joints and a crack pipe in his vest pocket, he gets nabbed and 3 to 5 in the slammer. I just don't get it. Actually, I do. And you do too. All right, now for a little boots on the ground story that's going to make you laugh. Now, if you live in Latin America, you'll find out soon enough that there are 3 ways of getting a driver's license. After all, if you've got a driver's license from Minnesota or Ohio, it's going to expire sometime. Which is why I always advise people who are getting their Plan B going to go down and get a new license. That way it'll run some years before it expires. With most states in the U.S., it's 5 years, but some 10. Now, it is true that even if your legit U.S. license expires, it'll work a long, long time afterwards here in Latin America. The fact is, you could have a driver's license that's 2, 3, 4, even 5 years expired, and if you get pulled over for whatever reason, especially when you're off the tourist trail, the cops can't speak English. They'll look at it and give you a pass simply because you've got the gringo advantage going for you. However, it's not at all a good idea to be driving with an expired license because if you get in a car accident, even if you have insurance, which I always recommend, the insurance won't pay out. Now, if you were to get an accident up in the States and your driver's license was expired, it would cost you thousands and you just might go to the slammer. Whereas here in Latin America, the worst you'll get is a small fine. In fact, just about a month ago, a gringo friend of mine got pulled over at one of those roadblocks. He didn't have a license on him at all. But the car plates and fees were all up to date, so they just wrote him a $40 ticket for driving without a license. Then they waved him on. Yep, they continued to let him drive on without a license. This is Latin America, you know. Now, you might ask, why didn't he just straight out bribe him? Well, problem is, you see, at one of those big roadblocks, there's lots of cops, and you usually can't bribe your way out when there's a big group of them around. It's kind of a private transaction, and the cops would like to keep it that way. Speaking of bribes being a part of life with officials here in Latin America, as mentioned previously, there are 3 ways to get yourself a Latin American driver's license. Number 1, you can pretty much ask any male Latin adult if he knows someone who can get you a license fast and cheap. And guess what? Usually, for $50 or $100, you can get a fantastic-looking, completely foolproof driver's license with your photo, fingerprint, and barcodes on it and everything. And it'll fool everyone, even the cops, until they run the numbers back at the station or through a barcode scanner. Now, nobody knows how many of those fake licenses are floating around throughout Latin America, but I can tell you this. There are certainly hundreds of thousands, especially in Latin countries that are not very sophisticated. That means ones that are off the gringo tourist trail. For example, take Guatemala, Honduras, or El Salvador. If you're ever stopped by the cops at a roadblock or you're in an accident or anything, the first thing you'll notice, for now anyway, is that they've got no way to actually scan your license and check it out with the home office, etc., etc. In fact, I was talking to a policeman just recently, and he said, yeah, very soon we'll have that kind of equipment. Then we could check the licenses and papers and cars online in real time. You get it? They haven't even got the equipment that was available in the U.S. and in the First World some 30 or 40 years ago. And then you go to countries like Colombia, Panama, Costa Rica, and most of Mexico, countries on the gringo tourist trail. They can, if you get stopped, check your numbers in real time right there just like they do up in the States. Welcome to Latin America. You gotta love it, huh? Oh, and by the way, then I said to that cop, why don't you just use your own phone and take a picture of the barcode and send it down to the station house and let them run the numbers for you? Well, he gave me a puzzled look, paused for a second, and said, that's a pretty good idea. Man, what did I tell you? Latin America, you gotta love it. Anyway, I know gringos and expats who bought those fake licenses, if not just to have a backup document, even if they weren't real. All right, now, a disclaimer here. You know, I'm not saying you should do anything illegal at all, but think of the possibilities. If you were to buy one of these licenses and give a completely different name, just hypothetically, wouldn't that be a nice way to stay way under the radar? Suppose you needed to get a mailbox or, let's say, utility hookup or internet service. Not trying to give you any ideas here. I'm just telling you what lots of smart gringos do who are trying to stay way under the radar. For example, there are lots of very secure buildings and offices. When you walk in, you have to get a tag, and you trade your driver's license for a tag, and that tag allows you to use the elevators, go to various floors. Government buildings are all like that. So professional and commercial buildings, too. Well, I don't know about you, but I won't give them my real license. Remember, they're going to have that thing for an hour or two or three, however long you're in that building. You never know what they're doing with it. Probably nothing, but there's always room for, as they say, dirty deeds done dirt cheap. Let's just say hypothetically, if you have a fake license like that, why have it in your real name or have your real birth date or address? Just thinking out loud here, I'm not advising you do anything illegal. I'm just here to report on how some astute gringos and expats do things once they land here in Latin America. Which brings me to method 2 out of 3 on how to get a driver's license in your preferred Latin American country. Well, as you heard me say in past shows, you have to have your residency to get a driver's license in most all Latin countries. We're talking about a legit registered driver's license. By the way, to get a legit registered license, first, you take a written exam. Then generally, in most, but not all Latin countries, you'll get a temporary or learner's license, which, like the temporary licenses up in the States and Europe, you could only drive during the day with some other restrictions, etc. The next step is to get an appointment at the driver's testing station, and you'll get in the car with one of the instructors, drive around for 5 or 10 minutes, and you pass or fail. Sounds easy enough, right? Well, let me tell you, there's a big-time scam going down at almost all driver's testing stations in Latin America. It goes like this. When it comes time to take the road test, it won't actually be on the road. It's usually in a giant parking lot attached to the driver's testing station with orange pylons all over the place, etc., to test your turns and parallel parking and such. Anyway, it'll cost you anywhere from $20 to $100, depending which country you're in, to take that on-the-road test. And here's the scam. Almost no one ever passes the first time. Many don't pass the second or even the third time, mostly women. So here's the scam. As soon as you fail the first time, you know you got to come up with another $20 to $100 2 weeks later, because that's the time frame they give you when you can retake the test. Well, let me tell you what happened just a few weeks ago when I was with a young Latina lady who was going through the process. Well, we went down to the driver's station, sat around for an hour. She took that on-the-road test. It only took about 10 minutes. She walked out sad-faced. She flunked it. But she knew she would. She told me very few people passed the first time. Well, when we got back to the parking lot into my car, a guy in a military uniform, this was a government parking lot, so the military guys around, walked up, knocked on the window, and said, hey, when you come back in 2 weeks to retake that test, I can guarantee you'll pass it, but it'll cost you $40. And the girl said, sure, what do I have to do? Then I said, wait a minute. Where's the guarantee? He said, come back at 8 in the morning in 2 weeks. You give me the $40 then, and I'll tell you what to do. And of course, they exchanged WhatsApp numbers. Now, I wanted to see this, so I went back with her. He was in the entrance guard station when we drove in. He walked over to the car. He said, don't give me any money, just walk with me. Then he made a phone call, walked us into the building, told her which line to get in. She paid the government road test fee again, which I think was $60. There were a number of instructors in cars there. A guy walked up to her, an instructor. He said, don't say anything about money or anything about this transaction at all while we're in the car. because we're on camera. And sure enough, when she got in the car, she saw there were two dash cams. Of course, who knows if anyone was watching, but they had cameras in the car. He passed her with flying colors. She walked out. Then she came back into the building where I was. And within a half an hour, they took her photo and she had her permanent driver's license. And as we walked out to the parking lot, the military guy sauntered up to us. He leaned his head and arm into the driver's side window and she handed him the dough. What a nice scam, huh? They just hold the threat over you that you'll just fail over and over again unless you fork up the grease or the bribe. Now, we were there a long while and I'd walked out into the parking lot a few times and had a chance to talk to that military guy. I asked him, do a lot of people do this? He says, almost all the women do. Because he said they'd get nervous and we've got plenty of reason to fail them over and over. And man, I'll tell you, the Latina I was with, she was just overjoyed to get that little piece of plastic, her real license. And it never once went through her head that the whole thing was nothing but a setup. So that military guy is accepting who knows how many bribes a day, maybe 10, 15, 20. And he's got a few people in the department on the take. So he's spreading that dough around. Now, here's the kicker. When you first walk in the building, there's a big sign. It's the first thing you see. It says in Spanish, of course, in huge letters, prohibido, that means it's prohibited, to give any kind of incentives, gifts, money, or whatever type of remuneration to inspectors giving practical driving exams. And then when you walk up to get the paperwork and fill it out, there's another sign that says virtually the same thing. And in the room you take the written exam, another big sign. And you guessed it, there's one in the crapper. And the Latina girl told me there's a sign in every car too, right on the dashboard. The signs are everywhere. They make a big deal about it. And for sure, that's why they've got cameras set up inside the testing cars. Yet they've got a slick workaround. Oh, and by the way, if you want some proof of this, just send me an email, theexpertfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you photos I took of the Thou Shalt Not Bribe the Government Slug signs posted everywhere. Oh, and about the third way to get a legal driver's license? Well, you go to a driver's school, pay $100. They take you through 6 or 7 classes, and they guarantee you the license. It's part of the bribery process, too. When you go down to the driver's testing station, the testers have already been paid off by the administration of your driving school. So you never fail. You always pass on the first round. Oh, and later that night, the military guy sent a nice WhatsApp message to the Latina, and he said, get this. So nice to meet you. Have a nice night. Dios bendiga. May God bless. Now, wasn't that nice of him?
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!